a great day to be in the house of God. So we've been going through the teachings of Jesus, and we've been working just through different messages that Jesus brought to the church. And we're actually starting kind of a new theme, and it's called Reality in Scandalous Reversal. That sounds like Jordan made that up. He did. But basically the idea is when Jesus came and he taught, he so often used contrasting perspectives that were contrary to the current worldview of that time. And so he would use like a paradox to bring out a point or bring out a message. So oftentimes you would hear him say things like, the way to rise up is to become low, to become humble, to become meek. Or when you are poor, you will be blessed. And it goes contrary to our very human nature of what we consider blessing or what we consider goodness or what we consider we deserve. And so we're going to start going into some of these paradoxes and trying to understand what Jesus was bringing out in his Jewish context. And the first area that we wanted to look into is, how do we as Christians consider ourselves blessed? Now this weekend, actually pretty much all week, I've been fighting bronchitis. And I have to be honest, when I'm sick, I get man sick. And I need comfort from my wife. But then she was sick, so she couldn't comfort me. So then I got annexed to the guest bedroom at night. And I'm like in my own little hole. And I have to be honest, I don't feel very blessed when I'm in the annex. In the doghouse. Probably because I'm snoring and coughing and snorting and tooting. Well, what does it mean to be blessed? See, as a Christian growing up, I was always taught that blessing was, well, you grow up and you trust God, you obey Him, you follow Him, you pray, and then you'll be blessed with a good job, you'll be blessed with a good house, you'll be blessed with a good marriage, and all things should be blessed, just generally blessed. But the problem is, so often, we don't feel blessed all the time. What happens when things fall apart or don't happen as we expect? And we say, God, look at me. I've prayed. I've worked. I've done all these things. I read my Bible every day. I go to church every Sunday. But why am I facing all these trials? Am I blessed? I sure don't feel like it when snot's running down my nose and I'm coughing and I can't breathe. See, this kind of goes back to what Leonard talked about last week. The North American church, we've grown accustomed to allocating or believing that blessing is related to materialism. Blessing is related to things. See, I'm blessed, and so often you'll hear it, you'll say, post on Instagram, got a great new job at the bank, hashtag blessed. Or, you know, got a brand new truck, blessed. And we assume that God's blessing is always something material. It's always something tangible. Our culture assumes that too. It's like my whole life is to build my own empire, is to work hard and work as much as I can and buy my boat and the cabin, and I am blessed. Sorry, I need some water. And through that, living in that culture, we often as Pentecostals have started to associate God's blessing with being healthy, wealthy, and wise. It's the American dream. And we just assume that we are blessed when we are healthy, wealthy, and wise. And that is God's, that's the fundamental nature of God's blessing. And from that, we categorize people into how blessed they are, based on their success, their net worth, their standing in society, their just how high they are in society. And we assume the higher they are, the more blessed they are of God. But is that truly what God's blessing is? See, when I was in grade 8, I thought I was pretty smart. I think it was grade 8. It might have been grade 9. And one of my best friends, he'd actually just got moved from the Christian Logos program into the AP program, which is like the Smarty program. If you have a certain IQ, you can actually be transferred into the AP program, and then they design special courses for you to stimulate your intellect. So I was going through grade 8, and I was at the prime of my functioning self. I really was. I was beautiful. I was talented. And I was healthy, and you know, I was athletic. That was when I got the Athlete of the Year award at my school. Grade 8, great year. And I was getting great grades, and I was finding generally school was very easy. So I told my mom about this one day, and she said, okay, well, we could consider like maybe moving you into a new program, into the AP program. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm gonna go in the AP and I'm gonna be a genius. Because I thought I was a genius. So one day they came into my classroom and they called me and they said, Robin, can you come down to the principal's office? And I was like, oh, geez, what's going on? And there was this like weird guy with funny glasses. And he's like, okay, Robin, I want you to perform all these tests. And he asked me all these questions and I had to draw these diagrams and I really didn't even know what it was. And he would ask you questions like, how wide is the earth in distance or around the globe? See, I'm not that smart. So, and I was like, I don't know, like a million kilometers? Like just said stupid stuff. So then a couple of weeks later, my mom, I think we were actually driving, and she's like, Robin, I need to tell you something. And I was like, what? Well, it's about the AP program. And I was like, oh, okay, great. Like, this is going to be good. She's like, you didn't make it. I was like, what? She's like, turns out your IQ was just average. But to be honest, it devastated me because one of my closest friends, who I thought was just a regular Joe like me, had also, and he wasn't even getting as good grades as me, had been graduated to the AP program. And I was devastated. I just remember crying and weeping and saying, God, how could it be so? I'm a retard. Sorry, I actually shouldn't use that word. But I felt like I was an idiot, even though actually I was just average. I'm just normal. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with me. But what I assumed out of that was that my value came from being intellectual. My value came from my IQ and being able to be in the higher level AP program. And I said, God, I feel like you've cursed me. I am fundamentally not good enough. Now, over time, I've worked through it. I'm okay. I'm okay with being average. And that leads me to our message. Matthew 11. And let's just go to Matthew 11, verse 1. Because I want to teach us today about what true blessing is. That it's nothing that we can do, and it's something that God gives to us. And fundamentally, God has made us perfect in His image. And when we realize that, it has the power to completely transform our perspective about ourselves, about our world, and about everything around us. Because we are blessed. So let's start in verse 11, verse 1. When Jesus had finished giving these instructions to his 12 disciples, he went out to teach and preach in towns through the region. Then John the Baptist, who was in prison, heard about all these things the Messiah was doing. So he sent his disciples to ask Jesus, Are you the Messiah we've been expecting? Or should we keep looking for someone else? Jesus told them, go back to John and tell him what you have heard and seen. The blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised to life, and the good news is being preached to the poor. And I want you to remember this, and tell him, God blesses those who do not turn away because of me. So let's just get a little background on this whole story. So John and Jesus essentially almost grew up together. But they went in very different directions. John became a prophet, and he was known to wear rough clothing and to be sort of a rough-neck dude who lived on the very basics. I mean, the guy ate locusts for dinner. Like, he was different. He ate locusts, honey, and he lived in the wilderness. And he was sort of this rough guy, but he would go and he would preach. And he would teach and he would preach repentance. And he would say, God's kingdom is coming. Prepare yourselves. Come and be baptized and be transformed into the newness that's coming. And he even started a following. He had numerous disciples around him. And Matthew 3:3 actually speaks of Isaiah 40:30. And he says, he's a voice shouting in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord's coming. Clear the road for him. So he's this incredible messenger that God has anointed, and Israel recognizes this. But then he starts getting involved a little politically, and he says some things about Herod, who's the leader of Israel at the time, and about Herod's relationship and marrying his sister-in-law, which is a little weird. And obviously, there's some ethical and moral dilemmas there because it all goes back to his brother. It's an ugly situation. So John started calling him out on that situation. And so Herod throws him in prison. Now, prisons in that time weren't like prisons today. You don't get your 3 square meals and a nice prison garb. You literally get thrown into a cave and locked up. And you're lucky if you get the daily sustenance of life. So water and maybe a piece of bread. So when John is coming to Jesus and he's sending his disciples to Jesus, he's not in a very, very good situation. In fact, he's in the worst possible situation. And John, being this great anointed leader, when he says, Jesus, are you the one we are looking for? He's really actually saying, Jesus, I am in a bad spot. Are you going to announce your kingdom and save me? Are you the Messiah we've been expecting, or should I look for another one? Jesus, I'm starving. I'm in a prison. I'm not fulfilling my calling. When are you going to say, I am the King of Israel and let me out? And Jesus responds and says, blessed is the one who does not turn away because of me. I don't know about you, but if I was John, I wouldn't feel very encouraged by that message. Just from, you know, you're sitting in prison and you're hoping Jesus is going to come and storm the temple and storm Israel with his great army and bring the kingdom of God and release the captives. And Jesus doesn't say, John, I'm coming for you. He says, God blesses those who don't turn away because of me. It really isn't encouraging. But it is going to get better. And to do that, we need to go back to the Old Testament. I always like to go back to the beginning because it's like the foundations. It's like where God laid the foundations of theology, laid the foundations of the earth, laid it all on the table so that he can build this beautiful story called earth and humanity. So let's go to Genesis 1 because I want to unpack this idea of blessing. Because there's actually more that Jesus is saying when he says, God blesses those who do not turn away because of me. There's more to that. There's more to that word blessed. In Genesis 1:1, I'm just going to actually kind of paraphrase as we go through here so we can get through it quickly. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and empty, and darkness covered the deep waters. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters. Then God said, let there be light. And there was light, and it was good. And God goes on and says, let there be water and land, and it was good. And he also says, let there be plants and trees, and it was good. And he says, let there be the moon, the stars, and the suns, and it was good. Let there be sea creatures and birds, and it was good. And God, in verse 22, says, he blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply. Let the fish fill the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth. And then he created all the wild animals, and it was good. Then God said, let us make human beings in our image to be like us. They will reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the livestock, all the wild animals on the earth, and the small animals that scurry along the ground. So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them. And once again, he said, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground. See, in the beginning, when God created all things, he fundamentally said, it is good. My creation that I have made is good. See, the whole foundation of this earth is good. And if we want to understand God's blessing, we have to realize that we as human beings, as created beings of God, as creatures of God, are fundamentally good. He said, it is good. His mandate to all creation is that it would be blessed. And when we are blessed by his goodness, we are then able to be fruitful and multiply. See, there's actually this great theme that comes out of Genesis, is it's be blessed and then be fruitful and multiply. Be blessed and be fruitful and multiply. But here's the real kicker that I absolutely love. And generally in English, we don't get this. But if we all were Hebrew translators or Jews, we might understand this a little bit better. Because blessed is barak. Yeah, barak. I don't even know how to pronounce it, but I'm going to try and sound like a good Jew and say barak. Now, we normally just think blessing is like blessing. I'm blessed. I'm blessed. Blessed to be a blessing. You know, like it's kind of this cheesy thing. I'm so blessed. You know, like the sunny-faced blessing. But the actual meaning of barak, when you delve down, the Hebrews would say, it actually means coming down. It means to kneel or bring a gift. It means it's coming from one place to be low and to bless. So when God is saying, I bless you, he is actually saying, I am coming down with you. I am here with you. It's not just saying, here's a bunch of stuff, go enjoy. He's saying, my presence is coming down to be with you. See, the God who creates everything, who has all power in the universe, kneels before us. See, the blessing is not all the fruit of the garden. The blessing is that God is in our midst. So often we seem to confuse the fact that we seek all the fruits and they become our gods. When God is saying, I created the fruit, feast on me. This theme continues to go on throughout Genesis. When we get to Noah, right after the flood, Noah had obeyed God and trusted God to save him through the floods. And the world at that time was so evil that God just said, I have to flood this earth. But Noah obeyed. And when they get off that ark, Genesis 9:1 says, then God blessed Noah and his sons. And this is what he told them. Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth. All the animals of the earth, all the birds of the sky, all the small animals that scurry along the ground, and all the fish in the sea will look on you with fear and terror. And I have placed them in your power. Abraham, in Genesis 12, God leads him into a new land, into a new place. And Abraham obeyed him when he told him to move. And the Lord said to Abraham, leave your native country, your relatives, your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you, and I will make you into a great nation. And I, Abraham, will bless you. I will kneel before you, that my presence would be with you. And I will make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who treat you with contempt. And all the families on the earth will be blessed because of you. See, there's something that Abraham got when God blessed him. And it wasn't the fact that he would be rich and wealthy, or that he would have many possessions and he would be well known. The blessing that Abraham had was that God would fundamentally come down and be present in his life. And from that, there was fruit. And from that, there was blessing. And from that place, there was good things. But if Abraham had God and had no other, he had to have him. If he was to be blessed. And once again, we just so often get it in reverse. We want the things, we want the fruit, all before we have the Lord of our lives, all before we have the blesser. And the problem is, when we do that, we ultimately get disappointed. When things don't work out as we expected, when we don't get that truck or that house, we say, God, how could you bless me? You've cursed me. When we don't have the blesser first, we get disappointed and we get broken and we say, God, you've totally betrayed me. I was expecting that raise. I needed that raise. Why did you abandon me? And that's the ultimate problem that we see in Genesis, is though God said everything was good, humanity decided to grab for the fruit first. And ultimately, we became cursed because we said, God, we don't want you, the creator. We want the fruit first. And so Genesis 3:17 says, And to the man, the Lord said, since you listened to your wife and ate from the tree. Good lesson there. Do not listen to your wife. No, bad lesson. Repentance. Always listen to your wife. Just not when she's giving you the bad fruit. Yeah, Mylon's not here, so I can say whatever I want. Since you listened to your wife and ate from the tree whose fruit I commanded you not to eat, the ground is cursed because of you. All your life you will struggle to scratch a living from it. It will grow thorns and thistles for you. Though you will eat of its grains, by the sweat of your brow will you have food to eat until you return to the ground from which you were made. For you were made from dust, and to dust you will return. See, I think this encapsulates the problem in our world, is we've tried to grab for the fruit, and as a result, we now just work, and we struggle for God's blessing. But if we don't have God, we can't fundamentally be blessed. See, we can grow every possession, we can gather every type of fruit, every type of thing out there that our world would conceive as blessing, but we will still be empty inside. The sweat of your brow, and ultimately, when you do that, you just return to dust. There's no benefit for your labor. There's no benefit for the works that you do. There's no benefit for the striving. And see, God, when he says that, he's just prophesying of what the nature of our human race will be, is we will strive and strive and strive. But if we, as long as we do not choose the blesser, it's always going to be a struggle, and we'll always end up with dirt. And we'll end into dirt. And that's why it's like in Ecclesiastes where Solomon says it's all vanity, vanity. It's just a striving in the wind. It's just a puff of wind. Because when you don't know the blesser, you have nothing to hold on to. And that's why this message from John the Baptist is so important. It's because John is saying, Jesus, I have done everything right till this point. And yet, I have been thrown in prison. How is that fair, God? And so, he says to Jesus, are you the one who will save me? Blessed is the one who does not fall away because of me. See, as we start to see what blessing truly is, we can actually get a better picture of what Jesus is saying, what blessing truly is. See, in this moment where John is saying, I'm going to die, Jesus, if you don't come, Jesus is saying back to him, John, I am so with you that I'm going to die too. But the beauty is in the line that Jesus says right before. The blind see, the lame will walk, the lepers are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised to light, and the good news is being preached to the poor. See, when Jesus says, blessed for you, when you will not fall away because of me or be offended by me, he's actually saying, John, I'm right there with you. And if you only knew what I'm going to do, if you only knew the path that I'm going to take too. And John, listen to the works that I'm doing. Listen to the good that I'm doing. I am the raiser of the dead. What Jesus is saying is, John, I can't change your situation, but I can change your heart. John, I might not be able to rescue you in this moment, but if you trust in me, you will be blessed. John is saying, Jesus, rise up and overthrow the powers of violence. Rise up, Jesus. Rise up. And Jesus is responding and saying, I am rising up. I'm rising up in a way that will overcome the very powers of darkness that have imprisoned you. And if you trust in me, you too shall rise again. Your moment in prison, your time in pain is only for the moment. But because I am the risen Lord, I am the Jesus that will be crucified for you, for all violence, for all evil, you too can rise again, whether you will die or live. And that is the message that Jesus is sharing with us today. Is whether your circumstance is in the pit of hell, Jesus is saying, I went straight to the pit of hell. And I conquered it. And I overcame the grave. And today, you can have life. But don't grab the fruit. Grab me. Don't grab your circumstance. Grab me. You may never see a solution to your problem. But I can guarantee if Jesus is in your possession and your soul possession and His heart is bringing you His new life, you can make it. In Matthew 10, Jesus says, in Matthew 10:28, don't be afraid of those who want to kill your body, for they cannot touch your soul. Fear only God who can destroy both soul and body in hell. What is the price of two sparrows? One copper coin? But not a single sparrow can fall to the ground without your Father knowing it. And the very hairs on your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are more valuable to God than a whole flock of sparrows. See, it goes back to Genesis. God fundamentally made you His child. It doesn't matter if your body is failing or you have struggles. You are a beloved child of God. And when you embrace His love, you can withstand anything. Do not let the external circumstances define you. If you are blessed and you realize that I am, the one that says it over everything, is with you. See, while John is asking Jesus, will you rescue me? Jesus is saying, I already have. Can I have the band come up? See, we need to change our perspective on blessing. Because the blessing that we receive in life is Jesus. It's the fullness of God. It's the fact that God made us His creatures. It's the fact that God made us His children. And we are beloved by a Heavenly Father. And so when we come to Matthew 5 and we read the Beatitudes, and it says, God blesses those who are poor and realize their need for Him. He's really saying God comes down to those who are poor and realize their need for Him. God comes near to those who mourn, for they will be comforted. God enlarges those who are humble, for they will inherit the earth. God blesses and brings fullness of joy to those who hunger and thirst for justice. God fulfills and brings happiness to the merciful because He is present with them. For they will be shown mercy. And God is near to those whose hearts are pure, and they will see God. God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called the children of God. And God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. And God blesses you when people mock you and persecute you and lie about you and say all sorts of evil things against you. Be happy about it. Be very glad, for there is a great reward that awaits you. See, if Jesus wanted us all to be healthy, wealthy, and wise all the time, then He would have followed that road. He would have gone up to Jerusalem with a great army and conquered all the powers of evil and then reigned in a great palace. But no, Jesus took a different path to what our world would consider a king should do. Jesus took a cross on His back and He climbed up a hill, whipped and bruised and broken. And then He said, it's finished. And then He went down to hell for us. and he broke the chains of violence and evil and of curses and of striving and of working. And he says, today, when you are with me, you are more blessed than anything else. No matter what external circumstances we face, God has come down for you. You are blessed because your Creator loves you. There's no material thing that can fulfill that need and that want than being close to your Creator. You are blessed because you are a creature of God. And God created you and he blessed you. And he says, I want to be interwoven in your life. Stanley Gren says, in addition to bestowing great value on us, God commands us to acknowledge the value he graciously gives to another person. We can do this as we give up the struggle to gain our own value from other people or other things. When we come to see ourselves as truly valuable, apart from our position in any pecking order, we can freely acknowledge the value of each person we meet. We can then realize that God bestows value on them just as he does on us. See, when we realize how blessed we are, we realize our true value. We realize that God paid absolutely everything for us. We realize that when he went down to the grave and to hell and conquered, he actually gave up everything for us. He could have been a king in a palace, but he chose to die. And today he's asking us, will we realize that value? Not only in ourselves, but will we see it in each other? Will we see how valuable and blessed our neighbor is? They may not have the RV or the boat, but they are a child of God. That is their intrinsic value. And finally, when we know that we are blessed, God says to us, be fruitful and multiply. He is saying, when you have me, just out of that, you will be doing amazing things. You will be fruitful. Your family will be blessed. Your life will be blessed. Your children will be blessed. Because when you have made Jesus Christ the center of your life, you just have to multiply. You have to give to others. You have to serve. You just can't hold it back because it's the creator of the universe. There's no resource that he can't control. There's no amount of finance that he can't hold back. There's no amount of health. He is the God of fullness, but he has to be the center. He has to be the call. So maybe we could stand today.